Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. A serious or life-threatening illness can reshape our view of life and our world. It can bring our priorities into sharper focus, but also leave us at a loss to find meaning and joy in the face of sadness and fear. When she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, Terry Luana Da Silva was 37, a wife and a mother to a young daughter. Faced with this life-threatening illness shortly after losing her mother to cancer, Terry decided to write about her experience in a blog she shared with friends and family. At Terry's request, her aunt, Laurie O'Neill, published her blog. It's now a book titled Graceful Woman Warrior, A Story of Mindfully Living in the Face of Dying. Laurie O'Neill, welcome.
Thank you, Mindy.
Also invited Ann Gagan to join us. She's a clinical social worker. She's worked on an oncology unit and a bereavement counselor as well. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Laurie, we should also mention that in addition to being Terry's aunt, and you're also a licensed social worker and have worked in bereavement counseling. So one of the reasons we wanted to do a program on this topic is that Terry's story is a reminder that living mindfully and with purpose, regardless of how much time we have left, 1 year, 30 years, can make our lives richer and more joyful. So Terry's story is at times heartbreaking, but it's also filled with joy, love, and hope. So tell us a little bit more about your niece, Terry.
Terry Luana. So she was born Luana Mountainborn Robinson in Crows Hollow, Nova Scotia, to two hippie artist parents, Spider and Jeannie Robinson. Both writer and my sister was a dancer, and they lived off the land when Terry was born, hence the Mountain Born name. interestingly, they moved to Halifax ultimately when my sister's career took off, and she opened the Nova Dance Theater, the first modern dance company in Nova Scotia. And 12 years later, when Terry was 12, they ended up moving to Vancouver, and she decided she was going to change her name to Terry. She said, Luana? Nobody knows Luana. So she changed it. She did. And she was an adventurous spirit. She exuded just love and grace. And she was a radical. She really, in her social work career, ultimately led her to open the Red Tent in New York City. She landed in New York after traveling all over the world, and New York became her home. That was where she loved. And she met her husband there and married there and had gotten her degree and worked corporate for a minute while she her husband was getting his degree, and then became pregnant and was thrilled. But unfortunately, her mom was then diagnosed with biliary duct cancer, like the most rare thing in the world. And ultimately, Terry chose to move to Bowen Island, Vancouver, Canada, to help take care of her mom. And she did. And she lived there till 2010, till my sister passed. And then it was her turn, finally, to live. And live they did. They were kind of homeless. They lived in Brazil. They lived with me for a while. And they landed in Ohio, of all places. Her husband got a job at Honda. And I think it was about 4 months after they moved that she was diagnosed with breast cancer.
So she starts the blog in December of 2011 with her diagnosis. What were some of the reasons that Terry started the blog?
She, like me, connects. She needed to be with people, hear people from people, and just receive that feedback and share her visions and her dreams and her hopes and her trials. Because through sharing stories, as her parents did, I do, she did, her daughter does now still writing, it helps you through the journey. And I think, you know, if I could read the introduction,
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
So she wrote this email to the closest friends and family. Hi, all. So I finally got my blog set up and wrote my very first entry based on the crazy news I received from my oncologist today. I've done this because it's all part of my master plan to use my diagnosis as a platform to further my social work training and help people in a more public way. The name of the site is GracefulWomanWarrior.com in honor of my mom and the name she gave me, Luana Mountainborn Robinson. Luana means Graceful Woman Warrior. And it just happens to apply so perfectly to my breast cancer battle. My goal is to share all the love I receive with the rest of the world through my actions and through my words. If my blog puts a smile on somebody's face or gives somebody something new to think about or offers a reminder about the lessons we all so easily forget in the daily madness, then I feel I'm working towards my goal. Big hugs to everyone, and thanks for your continued support. Keep praying for me. I need all the positive energy I can get. Love, Terry Luana.
And many people find writing therapeutic. Can the act of putting down on paper our anger, fear, frustration help us better cope with all these emotions?
Well, I think that this is a perfect example of expression, the good, the bad, the ugly. And it's in Terry's blog, you hear throughout the course of the journey how different emotions emerge, practical concerns emerge, fear emerges. And to put it out and put it down moves it along. The other thing I thought was so interesting is, you know, 20 years ago, this opportunity didn't exist to create a blog and to reach out to others. And she really took advantage of living in this time to help others. And that's clear from her motivation in this beginning entry.
Early on in the blog, Terry writes about the roller coaster of emotions. One day feeling confident of a plan to treat the cancer and her ability to cope. And the next day feeling despair, sadness, and anxiety. All of this while having to keep up the realities of day-to-day life. She had a 2-year-old daughter.
She did. And she parented that beautiful girl, and that beautiful girl sustained her. And she talks about that. She talks about how Marissa, she felt that everything happens for a reason. You know, we have a destiny. Obviously, we have conscious choice around what we choose to pay attention to and how we live. But Marissa came when her mom had cancer, and she talks about the fact that if that hadn't happened, she would have gone back to work. She wouldn't have been a stay-at-home mom. And her mom's cancer allowed Terry to be at home with her daughter and brought so much joy to my sister's life and to Terry's life. So throughout everything, you know, the light, she was always seeking the light. The darkness is there, but we have to figure out a way to go towards the light. And she did in viable ways, you know, through travel, through friends, through family, through service. I mean, she loved to help others.
I also think, having young children around and whatever the experience is, it's a distraction whether you want it or not, right? I mentioned to Anne before we went there, my dad died of pancreatic cancer. I remember towards the end, my niece's daughter was around. I think she was about 2, maybe 3 at the most. And she'd be like climbing all over the bed, and I would go to grab her to get her off, and my father would say, leave her there. You know, he wanted her there. It was, you know, a nice distraction from everything else that
To Terry, and figuring out, you know, how much to tell Marissa and how much to, you know, protect her from was always a challenge. I think it's a challenge for all of us, and I think we all do it a little differently. But Marissa was all in, and I mean, Marissa would help her do the vitamins and all the medications and put it in the pill box with her. They had so many rituals that were part of her journey. You know, they had to be because she had cancer, bottom line.
The other thing Terry mentions early on in the blog is how important her support network is, whether it's a handwritten letter from a dear friend or a card from an acquaintance. Those many small little acts of support add up. And so, Lori, talk a little bit about Terry's support network.
Well, it was all because of Terry. I mean, we were so drawn to her and you know, and it's part of our family culture, you know, that you show up. My sister, her mom, you show up. And I am a firm believer, and I always show up. So between all of the sisters, you know, we would take turns going out. Her dad, who had just lost his wife of 35 years and is not an avid traveler by any sense of the word, he spent a lot of time with Terry and her husband's parents are from Brazil. So he didn't have a network here, but they would come over and spend months at a time with the family. And there was a rotation of friends and family. And we just, and her best friend, Auntie Cole in the book, they were friends since high school. She, like me, I feel, we were the two that were the constants that, you know, had the time, had the availability, and we were present as often as possible.
And everyone has different ways of coping. Some people are more private, not comfortable with people offering help or articulating concern. How do we meet a person in the terms of respecting their needs and desires?
I think it's paying attention to who they are and listening and engaging oneself towards how much you impose, how much you say, no, I'm going to do this anyway. Many people, I think I'm really struck by Terry's willingness to receive.
That's interesting, Anne, because she had such a hard time. We, the Rubico women, are caretakers. I mean, that's what we do. So to find, and she talks a lot about that in the book, finding that balance of receiving help and asking for help was a big challenge for her. But that was her lesson. And and she talks about Marissa being her biggest teacher. My sister talked about Terry being her biggest teacher. I think, you know, we're open to learning, and that's the key.
Also making meaning out of all of this.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was struck by, was in every new situation or new challenge or new pain, Terry took time to reflect and try and find some meaning. So you have a philosophy that she must have had since before this.
Exactly. I feel like she was born with it. And I feel like, you know, her daughter has that same kind of perspective of life and that search, they're seekers. Mm-hmm. My sister was a seeker. It's kind of, and Terry clearly was.
Terry writes about her experience as a cancer patient, the toll of chemotherapy, PET scans, CAT scans, MRIs. For many people starting cancer treatment, they feel normal, even healthy. It's a confusing time, and the toll is both emotional and physical. Mm-hmm. Lori, talk about the stress an illness places on the person and family, especially when illness becomes a financial strain.
Well, there were lots of variables around that, and Terry really struggled with Western medicine, and she really fought hard with both Eastern and Western to integrate natural healing into her journey. And, you know, God bless her, she dove in. Mm-hmm. She always dove in. And Chris Carr, the crazy something cancer diet, she jumped right in. And it was a struggle because not everybody agreed with her choice around treatment. And that was one of her biggest questions. Who gets to choose?
Right.
Who gets to choose?
That is such a good point. I had a friend who had breast cancer, and one of the toughest things for her was all the advice. Mm-hmm. You need to do this, drink this tea, do that, do that. And, you know, you're right. It's like it becomes so overwhelming. You couldn't possibly do all of these things that everybody's suggesting, but which ones? Right?
Yeah.
In January of 2012, not that many months into her experience with cancer, Terry writes in her blog, "I realize that my goal for life now is to have as many good times as possible, to surround myself with everything and everyone that brings me joy and let go of the stuff that brings me down. Here's to enjoying the moment and creating memories." It can be difficult to let go of things and bring us down. So what are some strategies to help let go of that stuff that brings us down?
She had this drive to live. And Marissa, when we do our book talks, you know, she introduces the story, her 8-year-old daughter now. And it's pretty magical. I said, so what was Mamai's biggest grace lesson? Because we call them grace lessons from her mom from the book. To live life to the fullest, Auntie. And that was her solution to the pain. She really did. And I was saying to Anne earlier, I mean, you know, she was turning 40 and she was going to go to Chicago and celebrate with all her friends. Who cares if she could barely walk? Who cares if she was in a round of chemo that was not sitting with her? She was getting on that plane and she went. You know, I mean, there were consequences to that. And I'll never forget in hospice when we were looking at each other and she said, Auntie, do you think I just didn't pay attention? I said, well, I don't know, honey, because she broke her hip when we got to Chicago. And we were there for like 6 weeks. And I said, I don't know, maybe it was a form of denial. And she said, you know what it was, Auntie? Non-acceptance.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I looked at her and I said, you're right.
Yeah. Even to be able to put words on that, to be able to admit to that, because with the fierceness that she had in embracing life, to be aware of, no, I didn't accept.
Yeah.
That must have been very poignant.
Yeah, it was. And she had so many constantly, you know, and her daughter, I mean, has them, these jewels, you know, of these visions of how to live your best life.
Yeah. We're talking about the book, Graceful Woman Warrior, a story of mindfully living in the face of dying. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. Terry Luana Da Silva was 37 when she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. She wrote about her experience in a blog that she shared with friends and family. And at her request, her aunt, Lori O'Neill, published her blog. It's now a book called Graceful Woman Warrior, a story of mindful living in the face of dying. Lori O'Neill is with us, as is Ann Gagan, who's a clinical social worker who has worked on an oncology unit and in bereavement counseling as well. 866-999-4626 is our number if you would like to join our conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We talk about, you know, how grateful Terry was throughout her journey, despite all the challenges she faces. She's always finding something small or large to be grateful for. And I don't know if it's a question for Anne or you, Lori, but how can gratitude help us in difficult times? And how do we start on a path of gratitude?
It's a lifelong journey. And I know that Terry and I both, you know, did a lot of introspective work. We, you know, Melody Beattie and Journey to the Heart and Al-Anon's 12, you know, the Serenity Prayer. I mean, that was the basis of the book. I was trying to figure out, how am I going to take these 3 years worth of blog posts and put them into a story? Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many, many blog posts. So ultimately, it just came to me as I kept reliving the story through and with her, the Serenity Prayer. I mean, mm-hmm. that answers this whole story. The beginning, you have to accept the thing you can't change. You have cancer. Mm-hmm. The courage to change the things you can. What can I do about this? How am I going to live my life based on this horrific diagnosis? And ultimately, the wisdom to know the difference, what you can control and what you can't. Mm. And that's the whole mindfulness concept that she, and I think my sister's, you know, teaching her, bringing her up in that Buddhist tradition, even though Terry didn't realize it, she says, you know, she would take her to the beach and say, okay, we're going to be quiet for 20 minutes, Terry. And she said, ultimately, when she went to college, she gave her her first cushion to take. And Terry's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this? But ultimately, Terry had her own altar in her home. Marissa has an altar, you know, that was her mom's. Yeah. She has the cushion that she'll take with her someday.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's a lot of research recently on gratitude. Studies have been done. And a practice of gratitude changes brain chemistry.
Yeah.
So it's lovely to think that she had that. Because, again, I'm struck with Terry that she came to this very well equipped. Mm-hmm. And if you can say that. Mm-hmm. I looked at all the research on how they do best as far as the psychosocial adaptation to cancer. Mm-hmm. And she really had many, many inner and outer resources. Mm-hmm. And yet she was still had to cope on a day-to-day basis with life's little things like the temper tantrum that...
With Marissa their little one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yet, you know, here she is stuck on the side of the road. She can't take her out of the car. She's got mm-hmm. the port that just got put in. Mm-hmm. You know, so she was forced, as many of us are, when crisis enters our lives, to make choices around how you're going to manage that very difficult time. Mm-hmm. And gratitude on the other side, again, it's like the light, mm-hmm. constantly seeking the light.
Yeah. She chose to focus on what she can learn from her experiences with cancer instead of focusing on despair or the unfairness of the illness. You have an excerpt from the blog that speaks to how Terry chooses to approach her illness. Will you share that?
Yeah, June 22nd, 2012. Everyone has a cross to bear. Who's to say one person's cross is worse than another's? Every cross is different, and they are all difficult. They all suck. They all bring pain. Yet our crosses can also force us to ask big questions, reevaluate priorities, and make a commitment to living a fuller life. Amidst the turmoil, we can try to make peace with our crosses, figure out why that particular cross is ours to bear in the first place, understand the lessons contained in the suffering, and use it all as an opportunity to grow, learn, and discover who we truly are. To all those out there with a cross to bear, I feel your pain. We're all in this together. As my dad, author Spider Robinson, said, shared pain is lessened, shared joy increased. So let's all keep sharing.
Mm. Wow. Mm. She mentions in another passage that when we pass by someone on the street, we don't know their life experience or what they may be struggling with. But it's important to remember we're all struggling. Mm-hmm. It's a reminder to look at one another with compassion, how easily we can forget to do this. How can compassion for others help us in our own struggles?
It is the basis of humankind, I feel. And empathy, compassion, it just allows us to not only help others, but to recognize that our story is not so significant as it may seem. Even though it feels that way when you're in it, you just have to look around. And I think that's the key, is to look around and share our stories and open up ourselves mm-hmm. compassionately to those around us.
Mm-hmm. Did Terry get a lot of feedback where people were sharing their stories to her
and
with her?
Thousands of comments on her blog. I mean, this blog just blew up. worldwide. And that was another piece of my struggle, figuring out how to write this, mm-hmm. put it into a book form. What do I do with all the comments? Because they were so integral to the story. But I realized I couldn't.
You can't do all that, yeah.
But for her, those connections. And I feel that we're humans and we seek connection. And that's the key. And compassion is a road.
And I was thinking even compassion, not even in the extreme of somebody's illness, just compassion, like we're saying, somebody yes. struggling, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. just a simple kindness, mm-hmm. hi, how's your day? I mean, those things, when you think about when you're having a really bad day mm-hmm. and you're grumpy and then all of a sudden somebody does something really nice, the car in front of you bought your coffee or,
yes.
The car, they let you go in traffic. Mm-hmm. Those little things all of a sudden can just really change your mm-hmm. day. We mentioned earlier what a strong support network that Terry had in her friends and family, but others in similar situations might not have such a robust support network. So talk about the different organized support groups, maybe Anne, this would be you, that might be helpful to people who are facing serious illness and just don't have that support.
Well, I think in some cases there are patients who find that they're facing cancer by themselves. Mm. When I work with people that are in that situation, we really explore what exists immediately around them. And that may be their church. Mm-hmm. That may be a group that they are involved with. It takes their own ability to say, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the work usually that I have to do is, yes. is helping them say, I need help with mm-hmm. this. Many organizations, Cancer Care is a wonderful organization. People can be in an online support group. Most hospitals have support groups and or oncology social workers mm-hmm. to have that extra support. And then the social worker will help them find other groups mm-hmm. that will assist them.
I think social workers, we just have that,
yes.
that case yeah. management kind of viewpoint of the world, that there are places we have to look and we have to connect all the dots. And I'll never forget going out to Ohio my first time after she was diagnosed, and her best friend came in at the same time, and between the two of us within that first day we had applied for disability. I mean, Terry was just like, oh my god, Nicole did the whole kitchen, we did the whole kitchen. And it's that network mm-hmm. that you have to seek. And you're right, when you're alone it's very difficult, but you have to be open to,
asking. Yeah. Terry writes about her cancer support group being made up of women who are older than she and
yeah.
grappling with some very different issues given their age differences. At 37, with a 2-year-old, she's probably not experiencing cancer as the same way as mm-hmm. a 70-year-old woman would be. So talk about the importance of finding the right support group.
I think it's a challenge. I think that, she searched and she searched, and we helped her search. And she did ultimately find some networking, especially through the blogging world.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many blogs out there of young women, so she met a lot of people. And Tammy Bomer, who wrote Miracle Survivors, became like her guru, mm-hmm. And then they met at one of the conferences. Tammy, she ended up passing, after Terry, actually. But that's where she would find a lot, through the blog, actually, mm-hmm. which is great.
And in previous programs, we've discuss the importance of caregivers taking care of themselves. Talk a little bit about the toll a serious illness takes on family members, especially partners or spouses, and what supports might be available for them.
Well, it varies with every situation. And very often I've found that there is a dance between the caregiver and the patient,
mm-hmm.
and communication is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed again in the blog that Terry sought her own therapist, mm-hmm. and her husband, Heron, received counseling too.
Mm-hmm.
To the communication of needs, of support, of yes, where do I turn as the caregiver?
Mm-hmm.
And again, being open to receive help and not try and do it all by themselves. Now, the extended family was amazing in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone has that.
Right.
And then you have to, again, maybe go to the next ring of help, which
mm-hmm.
might be professional help or friends through organizations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What did you I think that there is a need always for that support, and not mm-hmm. because the loss is loss for everyone in the family.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think that, there are different layers. And I think the friends and the family, we all helped each other through it, you know. And my girlfriends, you know, saved me and continue to save me throughout my life, through all my losses and through the challenges. And I think that support groups, I mean, I know the grief support group that I had run called the Caring Tree in New Bedford was a family grief model. And that was the key, because we are so isolated in so many ways through our journeys. So this was where the parents would come with mm-hmm. the children, and we would all eat together, and then we would break up and go into groups. It was the Good Grief model through Maria Trazzi at Boston Medical Center. And Marissa and her own ended up joining one called The Cove in Connecticut, which was the same model. Mm-hmm. So the parents would go to their own little group, and then the kids went, and then they would come together, because you need to do your own work, and you have to do it together as well as a family.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation, 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You've touched a little bit about Marissa, but tell us a little bit more about Marissa.
She's just this magical. She has been since she was born, and my sister said she was a bodhisattva, which in Buddhist terms is an enlightened one. She came to this mm-hmm. world already enlightened, and she's a writer. She's a dreamer. She is a creative, you know, she loves to perform. so she's like, Auntie, when we did a book trailer. So we go to New York. Her mom made a bench at Astoria Park, her favorite place. And so I take her for her mom's birthday every year. And this year we were building up to launching the book. And I'd seen Michelle Obama's Becoming book trailer. And I said to Marissa, let's watch this. So we watched it together, and I said, do you want to make one for the book? She says, yes. So we practiced on the 3-hour drive to New York, and Terry's cousin Jeannie, who did this beautiful cover, Jeannie Moore, lives in Astoria, and she came and videoed it. And it was just magic. And her teacher showed the class, which was just such a gift, such a gift. Mm. And she came home, she said, Auntie, I think I'm famous. It was so beautiful. So out of this horrific tragedy in her life, she is finding a place of wholeness and a place where she is accepted, and she can bring her mother along with her.
Mm. You mentioned this, but Terry writes in the blog about how this cancer enabled her to spend more time with her daughter, that she, if she hadn't had that diagnosis, she would have had a full-time job and missed out on many of the moments that she was able to experience with Marissa. Mm-hmm. Clearly an optimist, someone who sees the glass half full. So there are some joys and challenges both to having this illness and bringing up Marissa.
Yeah, she needed a lot of help. And luckily, Terry was one that asked for help, you know, and being a social worker herself, me being a, you know, social worker that specialized with kids, you know, I mean, her mom wasn't there. So I sort of became her mom in many ways, mm-hmm. you know, and her girlfriends, and, you know, she had some great supports in Ohio, and she really hated moving to Ohio. I mean, she's a city. She mm-hmm. loved New York. So it was a really difficult time for her, period. But there was a school called Overfield that she would find the most beautifully culturally diverse schools for her daughter to go to, you know. And it became a community, like you said, a church community and or a school community. And she just was like a magnet. Mm. She was a magnet. You were just drawn to her. So she would receive that support around, you know, parenting Marissa.
And, of course, parental illness has a big impact on children. So, and I imagine the same thing. I was thinking if I were in Terry's head, I'd be going, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to see her grow up, you know. And what will she remember of me, right? But so talk a little bit about that, you know, and what Marissa does remember.
Having already been through it with her grandmother, Nana Canada is what she called my sister, I mean, we'd already lived that journey. So we videoed constantly, you know. Jeannie and Terry and I, you know, up in that little house in Bowen Island where they live, and we'd have I'd always have the video camera going. We'd always have the music playing, and Marissa's dancing. So we watched those videos, Marissa and I. And then we also have videos, you know, that her mom and her made. And actually, this is
this book,
the legacy from Marissa. This is a legacy from her mom forever. And the fact that Marissa is a co-author of the book just brings it so much closer to her heart. Mm. And it's so interesting. She asked me this question, and I was completely unprepared. The books came in. I had 350 books in my house, and her dad came over. And, of course, the first book I wrote dedicated to them and gave it to them. And she's sitting at the table, and she looks up and says, Auntie, can I read this? And like every good social worker, I was like, that's a really good question. And I looked at her dad, and we kind of said, well, there's some grown-up stuff in there. So she's kind of looking at me. I said, wait, there is a section you can read. It's the one you wrote. And she flipped right back to her section and she read it. So I think it was an important question that we always bring up at the book talks because, you know, her friends are very right. much into seeing the book that Marissa wrote. And but they have to understand it's a grown-up story. But in the back is the kids section yeah. just for you.
Yeah, not everyone could remain as positive as Terry did throughout her illness. And it's probably not a good idea to get down on yourself if you aren't always positive in right. the face of significant challenges. So how can we be true to ourselves and also mindful of how a different mindset might help us better cope with a situation?
Yes, I think there's been a lot of work on this subject because some people are inherently a little bit more reserved or mm-hmm. don't have the expressive tendencies, don't know that they could write about this, don't know. Some people have a sense of shame mm-hmm. about being ill or being weak or being fearful. I think this is very important to just know that there's a difference between hope and optimism. Optimism is like, I'm going to beat this no matter what, and here's my outcome. Hope is, I'm going to face every stage of this experience, hoping and acting mm-hmm. and taking action. That's the biggest thing mm-hmm. that if anyone is a cancer patient, to own the experience, to make decisions, to get involved, even if it's just deciding what you're going to eat one day, mm-hmm. That you don't just passively accept everything that is told to you, mm-hmm. to question, to come in with complimentary ideas, to come in with what else could help. And I think that the main thing is that everyone has a different personality and a way of dealing. What counseling or therapy can do is supplement a person's natural tendency, if they're a little pessimistic, to work with that. If they're a little bit fearful, to work with that. So I always encourage people to get some kind of professional support while you're mm-hmm. going through this process. And sometimes medication's very mm-hmm. helpful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I was just thinking, you know, sometimes you're the cancer patient, you're going, I don't want my family to have to go through any more pain than possible. Mm-hmm. So they sometimes may feel like if they're sharing too much, that they're burdening the family. Mm-hmm. And the family, on the other hand, wants to know all of these things. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of it goes back to what you were saying, Anne, about mm-hmm. communication. Right?
Yes. Yeah. And I think for her, this really helped getting the blog out because everybody was calling. And she was exhausted answering mm-hmm. the phone, you yeah. know? So this, and I think the caring pages, which they've mm-hmm. set up throughout most hospitals, is a window for many people to be able to share the news, share their stories, whether they're, you know, the grief as well as the tragedy, as well as the hope and the joy, in a wider audience, and that it saves you the energy right. to deal with your illness.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. When she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, Terry Luana da Silva was 37, a wife and a mother to a young daughter. She decided to write about her experience in a blog that she shared with her friends and family. Her aunt, Lori O'Neill, has published that blog in a book titled Graceful Woman Warrior, A Story of Mindfully Living in the Face of Dying. Lori O'Neill is with us, as is Ann Gagan, who's a clinical social worker who's worked on an oncology unit and in bereavement counseling as well. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We talked about this, that Terry went through therapy in her illness, and she doesn't write much about her sessions, but she does mention that in times of sadness and fear, therapy helped her process those emotions. Mm-hmm. Sadness and depression can be part, obviously, of a serious illness. So what are some signs that someone should seek help for these feelings? Is it something you want to do as soon as you're diagnosed? Is it, you know, at what point do you think, I think Terry started pretty early on. But
she is a therapist, so I think we all have a value yeah. as therapists, you know, that for therapy. And so that was a no-brainer for her. But I think it's difficult for a lot of people. And I think it's different for every person, too. Yeah. And I think the people around you often can be the watchers that say, oh, I think it's time. Can yeah. we, you know, because I see you're having trouble getting out of bed. I mean, I can remember a time when it was very, very dark. And she writes about that. You know, Marissa went down to for the weekend, and I found myself just you know, washed in despair, you know, because her light wasn't around to pull me out, so to speak.
Terry talks about the new normal, a life of doctor's appointments, treatments, and being ill. How do different people react to the new normal? Do people go through a grieving process when it sinks in that they won't be returning to their previous lives and routines? And I guess that's different for everybody. It might be a while before that sinks in.
Sometimes it takes quite a while. There's the person that is might go into a avoidance or denial. This just can't be. I can't imagine waking up one day and your whole world is completely changed with a diagnosis and everything that you imagine can happen. So it, for some personalities, it takes quite a while to move into acceptance. And the uncertainty with all the testing and all the diagnoses and the blood work and the, you live with uncertainty for quite some time. I think once you're in treatment, and you have a treatment plan, there's sort of a, okay, now I'm going to, you know, get all my resources here and and do my best. I don't think it's the best time to process feelings when you're right in treatment. It's kind of when you're at it for a while and you've had some ups and downs that you're beginning to say, oh, gosh, I this is a lot more complicated and than I imagined initially when I was just fiercely out there to beat this cancer.
Yeah, I agree.
And for Terry, she was stage two and all of a sudden it was stage four.
So that is when you were talking, I remembered, you know, when she was first diagnosed. And knowledge is power, but yet sometimes seeking that knowledge, you can get stuck in the seeking, and she was kind of stuck in the seeking. So she, you know, we went to New York. She wanted to get a second opinion. We went to Sloan Kettering. And by the time, and figuring out which doc to use in Ohio, you know, where she really wasn't comfortable, but she found the most fabulous Dr. K, who I just, you know, I can't say enough about the people that come into our life, the physicians and nurses, et cetera, who really look you in the eye and make a difference. And he did. And so she went with him. But by the time she settled into the reality and went in for, they wanted to shrink the tumor before she had her mastectomy. It jumped to stage four. She had a very aggressive form of cancer. So that was just horrifying. And that was that led to the whole, I mean, again, you don't know. You just don't know what's going to happen the next day, which is why she kept coming back to, I've got to embrace today is all I have right now. Yeah. That's that mindfulness piece.
Let's talk to Nancy, who's giving us a call from Dartmouth. Hi, Nancy. Hello? Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi, dear.
I think you've got your, you want to turn your radio down. Okay, we'll let you turn your radio down. And while you're doing that, you have another excerpt you want to read for us?
Sure. So this is from the second part, trying to figure out the courage to change what you can. This whole cancer journey is teaching me how important it is to follow your heart. Too many of us make choices based on other people's wishes and not our own, inevitably leading us down a road of discontent and misery. Why not chart a new path based on what feels right to you? Why not live the life you want to live? Sure, you may ruffle a few feathers in the process, but who cares? Just follow your heart and things will fall into place. Life is valuable. Don't waste it.
So what were some of the ways Terry lived life on her terms despite the cancer?
So the biggest journey that she received the most pushback on was to go natural. I mean, so her first year of treatment, she, you know, did the Western medicine, started to integrate Reiki and acupuncture and herbs, and she had a naturopath. And so she used both Eastern and Western medicine. And in the second part of the book, she was deemed cancer-free, you know. I mean, in remission, so to speak, because when you have metastatic, you're never, quote-unquote, cancer-free. Right. But she was just overjoyed and just so full of life and love and appreciation and gratitude. And as she traveled forward, it came back. And that was such a struggle for her. It was such a struggle. So to still treat it naturally, she was getting a lot of pushback to go the Western medicine route. And so that was where she really had to, but she just read, you've got to go with your heart.
Yeah. All right. Let's try Nancy again from Dartmouth. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, dear. Nancy from Dartmouth.
Oh, my Nancy.
Oh, my Laurie. Here I am. And I'm hearing the voices. I'm going to the bank, the dentist. And I thought, oh, what a gift you are. What a gift to so many children, to so many friends, and how blessed so many of us are for you. I just hope there's somebody there for you the way you've been there for so many other people. God love you.
Nancy, that is such a good point, honey. Well, you are there for me. And Nancy was the assistant principal at my school, as well as a lifelong friend and family, quote-unquote family, right, Nance? And another visionary in her own way. But
My dear, you're doing extremely well.
Thank you, my dear. And it's, you know, I think sharing the story, Nance, has always been the challenge, you know, and now it's out there. And thank you.
Nancy, thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626 is the number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. You have another passage from the book you want to read.
Yeah,
you mentioned her different, you know, the alternative medicine that she went to.
Yeah. That's something I continually realize as I chart my path through cancer. We all have our battles to face, our demons, our tragedies, and difficult situations with which to contend. Whether it's cancer, homelessness, bankruptcy, divorce, unemployment, infertility, at some point, we all reach a crossroads in our life. These challenges shake us to our core, humble us, jolt us awake. Then we have the choice to either keep trying to return to what was, or to embrace the change and redefine ourselves and our realities. Each of these moments presents us with the opportunity to make our lives even better than they were before. Why not seek to live a better life? What have you got to lose? I mean, this is, you know, in the second part of the book when she is, the cancer's back.
She recognizes that she's still living.
Yes.
She embraces the fact that I am still alive. What can I bring to it?
Yes.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on how we open ourselves to the possibility of change while we're going through such a difficult situation?
That's such a multifaceted question because it's based on so many factors, right, Mindy? I mean, it's based on who you are, how you were brought up, what your family says and doesn't say, what your culture allows you to express or not express. Mm-hmm. So it's very individualized, I think.
Yeah. Okay. And going back to the complementary or alternative medicines, in a lot of ways, I'm thinking, you know, there are people who say, you know, that's not going to work or, you know, whatever the objection might be. But if you are getting something out of it, even let's say that there's no evidence that it works scientifically, but mentally it makes you feel better.
Which then
that's
also boosts your immune system and allows you to fight harder.
Right.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, we always talk about the power of the mind.
Well,
right?
Again, and taking some control over this dilemma you're in, and being judicious about it, of course. I think everyone that does that has to make some really big decisions to not be treated, you know, traditionally, and versus looking at other opportunities. But when you're at that place in life, you want some control and take some personal action.
That's a huge piece of the puzzle, is having control over your own destiny, without a doubt.
Jennifer writes, thanks for the show. When my dear aunt was slowly dying from ALS, she was far away, so the only way we had to visit with her was with Skype. Oh. At first, it was so awkward trying to figure out how to talk with her, but when she really couldn't answer easily, I would read selections of poetry and stories to her, and she'd laugh and sometimes cry. Sometimes she would signal to hear it again if she liked the selection. I would sometimes bring her along on my smartphone as I did daily tasks and errands. I'm so grateful that we got over our self-consciousness and made the effort to connect when we could. I miss those times.
Those are the key, showing up. I mean, you know, in hospice, when she was in hospice, it was Thanksgiving. There were probably 20 of us in that hospice, and they were wonderful in Middleton, Connecticut. And we had the dinner, and we had the guitars, and we played music, you know, and we showed up.
And amazing how technology can help.
I know, right?
Amazing what times we live in. Lori and I were talking about how things used to be with children, and even talking about cancer was taboo.
Oh, taboo, yeah.
Let alone it being able to receive resources. There weren't resources.
No.
So here we have technology that sometimes we say, oh, technology, but it can do amazing things to help people remain connected.
Oh, my gosh. When we were kids, cancer was like, oh, the plague. You know, it was like you wouldn't dare talk about it. All right, so tell us about the big idea.
So Terry, so this is year 2.5 into her cancer journey, and she just decided to take a spiritual pilgrimage. She needed to seek more answers for herself, and she went to Italy and France. I mean, she was in the middle of chemo, and I gave her a journal. Of course I did, because we love to write, so we took a travel journal, and I have her journal, and I found this in her journal, and I call it Terry's Big Idea, a bold blueprint for life truly worth living. Why not think big? Dream big. People may not get you, but the dreamers are the ones who change the world. When you honor yourself, everyone benefits. Better to be true to yourself. Be different. Be unique. Honor your truth. So dance, love, pray, travel, meditate, learn, grow. Be inspired and inspire others. Be good to yourself and others. Find the beauty in life. Nurture your soul. The time has come. Terry Luana de Silva. This makes me cry every time I read it.
It's beautiful. I mean, her writing is just... Oh, she's an incredible writer.
Incredible writer. Yeah. And, you know, again, she was actually had started to write her own book about her mom and her own cancer journey right before she passed.
You also, and we mentioned there's Marissa's section, so letters and pictures that Marissa has written to her mother over the years. Anything you want to share with that from that?
She likes to read the last one. She was 8, and it was the day after she had really had a really, really hard time missing her mom. And so I said, do you want to write her a letter? And she said, yes, Auntie. So she dictated it. Dear Mama, I miss you so much. I miss you every day, and I love you, and I want you back. You were everything to me. You were the one that made me. I wish you were here making new memories. The old memories are fine with me right now. The most important thing is that I was with you. Mm-hmm. And so we went to the beach and we sent that off in the ocean to Mamai.
And, you know, when we talk about grief, everybody grieves differently. Mm-hmm. And children grieve differently than adults, mm-hmm. right? So for folks who might be in the situation thinking, how much do I tell the kids? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we deal with this? Thoughts on that?
Don't be afraid, first and foremost. Recognize that they are developmentally, you have to talk to them in their own language, like a 2 and a 3-year-old. You'll be different with a 4 and a 5. Concrete is very important, being concrete. Don't to say they went to sleep, because then the child may never want to go to sleep again, because they might die. You have to really think about it, but there's so much literature, Mindy. Bibliotherapy is what I use primarily in my work with kids. There's so many fabulous books. When Someone You Love Is Dying is something I did with Marissa right before her mom died, and she drew the most gorgeous picture. At the back of the book, it says, draw you and your loved one. And there was a cross on the top. And I said, oh, what is that, honey? And she said, that means God.
You know? Wow. Mm.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. So you give them the vehicles to be able to talk about it, write about it, you know, draw about it, use their mediums. And it's there. Mm-hmm. It's there for the taking. You just have to be brave enough as us adults, who are the ones that are usually the ones that have difficulty with it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also ask them what they know already.
Yes, mm-hmm. Very
important.
That's
a really big thing. What have you noticed? What are you seeing? Have you noticed that mommy's doesn't get out of bed? What do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Being curious. So that opens things up to what their own awareness level is, and then go from there.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then just some final thoughts. We have like about 30 seconds left, Lori.
Well, I hope you guys will think about grabbing the book. It is an inspiration, and everybody that reads it just calls me and says, oh my gosh, Lori, it was so hard. It was tragic, mm-hmm. but it was beautiful. And my mother, who's 91, the matriarch who's lived through so much loss, read it when I was in Canada, and I came back and she cried and she said, Lori, it makes me want to do my exercises and get my walker. I mean, that's how it leaves you.
Yes. Yeah. Live your best life.
Your best life.
Yeah. The book of Terry Luana de Silva's blog is titled Graceful Woman Warrior, A Story of Mindful Living in the Face of Dying. We'll have a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Lori O'Neill, who published the book, thank you for coming in and sharing Terry's story
thank
and
you,
wisdom
Mindy,
with
so
us.
Much.
And Ann Gagan, of course, thank you for coming
thank
in
you.
As well. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.